And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started. Well, Patty, we've been talking about the entrance of Darlene Arnone, a.k.a. Dar Thumper, who came into the band as this very tasty drummer, you said, talent personified, and how within weeks of her joining, I mean, this is November 1966, Nan Ball was out by the end of October 66. So we're talking within a few weeks with Darlene's entrance. The Pleasure Seekers performed at Dick Clark's Carnaby Street Festival. And at the end of this three-day event, the band, the Pleasure Seekers, with Darlene, all of you were given a special recognition prize at the end of the festival. And so I just wanted to hear a little bit more about what this prize was about and tell us about it all. And hello.
Hello, hello. You know, it was Dick Clark, for God's sakes. It's hard to believe that they didn't film something on that thing, you know, that he did them all across the country. I don't have it. I would die to have it because it was cool. We were the only local band on it, you know, so it was pretty cool. It was an outstanding musical performance award. And it was at the end. We were the only local band on that show. And we thought it was pretty darn cool with playing with the national acts, you know?
That's fantastic. I have to say that I have been doing my due diligence in trying to find any film footage on this festival. And so far I have not, but that doesn't mean it's not out there. But I am definitely looking. But you just said something. I mean, here you are, you're a local band. And you're playing with these national bands, right? I mean, you're playing with the Yardbirds. You're playing with Sam the Sham. And so you get this special recognition. I mean, that's not a token nod at all.
No, no. And we knew that it upped our creds a bit because, for God's sakes, you know, getting that and being the local band, we knew it was important, playing with these national bands and then getting that was like the gravy on top, you know. It was cool.
You were getting your street creds, but let's not forget here that you have a single that's out. It's charting. In one of
Yes.
the local radio stations, it's number 25 on the charts. And you're being recognized and you're playing everywhere and you're continuing to just have this meteoric rise. But I also now really want to flesh out Darlene Arnone's entrance because it's not just her coming into the band. But you said something on the last episode that I really wanted to clarify because I think this is history in the making. You said that Darlene was taking drum lessons from the age of 11. Right,
Yes.
and that when she joined the band, that she did not have a sponsorship yet, but we'll get there. But when she was playing with another girl group, we'll call it, called the Lorelais, and
Yeah.
Nan Ball was still your drummer. And so at the time when Darlene joined, she was playing one bass drum. So there's a lot to unpack here, but when she joined, she had not received her sponsorship from Slingerland yet. She gets her sponsor, excuse me, I can barely say this, I'm so excited. She gets her sponsorship, and she becomes, we think, the earliest female teen rock and roll drummer to get a drum sponsorship. I mean, this is 1966. Rock and roll is still somewhat new, let alone a teen female drummer getting a sponsorship. And it was this sponsorship that she started to play two bass drums. And that, I think, is a historic moment. You did not see that a lot in rock and roll bands in that moment in time. So talk about this decision, talk about her entrance again of coming in as this phenom. Anything you want about Darlene Arnone to set the stage for this episode.
Okay, so I'm going to clarify. It was a crazy couple weeks at that point. We had done the Chrysler Cruise Show in the summer where I saw her and met her grandma. I call her Grandma Arnone. She was like our stage mom. Her real name was Lily. And I was so taken with her. Imagine what I must have thought. You know, here I'm wandering around and we're going to play later. And I see Darlene playing. And we had just had such a mashup of lineup changes in the winter, right? And Arlene coming in and stuff. And all of a sudden, I see this phenom drummer, and they're playing with another girl band. And it's like something in my gut must have hit me, and I didn't realize it to get a card just in case. I mean, who knew how long, you know, with Nan's mom being so strong, yanking Mary Lou out, and Nan was lying to stay in, who knew when they would yank her? And it must have been in my mind to protect myself. And wow, I got to get this girl's number just in case. Maybe. I don't know, but I might have thought that, and that might be why I did it. And then we did the Autorama, and that was Nan's last gig. It came to fruition. What a thing. And then, bam, I called Darlene. She came over and tried out. She was fed up with the Lorelais. They were the two sisters she was in with. They wouldn't even spend money to get a PA. And Darlene, as she told me, I talked to her last night. She said, "I was so serious, Patty, about my drumming and all that." She said, "I couldn't stand it. I was so mad that they wouldn't put in 70 bucks." So, I mean, you know, so there was politics in the other real bands too. I mean, it's so funny. And she was so happy to come over and try out for the Quatros band. And her grandmother was foaming. I
Well,
mean,
I want to hear more about all of this, but you just said something that I think when you said you were walking around for the 3 days, you didn't know if Nan was going to be there or not, but there you are performing with Nan still. But something in your gut told you to check out Darlene and get her information. But let's remind the listeners that rock and roll is new, let alone women in rock and roll. And you have said multiple times that you didn't have a large pool of female musicians to pick from, whether in Grosse Pointe or even in Detroit, so that normally you were going with convenience, but here you are with Darlene. I mean, she was good. This was not convenient. This was, you weren't settling anymore. And I just think it's incredible this timing, the synchronicity or serendipity, if you will, of her entering. And so talk a little bit more about when how this transaction happened with we were calling her Grandma Arnone, but let's give her props. She is Lily Weaver, and
yes,
she,
that's her name.
along with Darlene, became integral to the Pleasure Seekers. And
Yes.
so I just wanted to clarify for me that it was Darlene's grandmother, Lily, who approached you to give you a card. How did all of this work when you were at this cruise?
She didn't approach me. I approached her. I must have, maybe I saw Darlene talking to her on the side of the stage. Who knows, before or after. But I asked for her card and I kept it. And I introduced myself and everything. And she seemed pretty happy to meet me. So, who knows what was in her head, because I'm sure she knew about the politics going on within the Lorelais. And yeah, she was always looking after Darlene's career. And how funny that it's amusing to me that we didn't go to the choir pool to bring Darlene in. No more choir pool. We actually found a phenomenal, talented drummer when Nan had to go. And we were much closer. Our neighborhood, they weren't in Grosse Pointe, but they were close enough that it made it a lot easier. I don't know who drove her to practice or what, but it was easier for them. And she was so fed up, she was just ready to leave.
Well, she was ready to leave, and this is not the only conversation we will be having for the rest of season three about
Yeah.
Darlene's phenomenal drumming, what she brought to the Pleasure Seekers, but also the reception that she started to have from the fans and some of your other musicians, your homeboys that you were playing with. I mean, she really brought an importance to the Pleasure Seekers in terms of your musicianship. Not that all of you weren't fantastic, but tell me if you think I'm wrong. I think she upped the ante for all of you.
She did up the ante. It's funny because she reminded me last night when we talked that I used to have her take a little spot in a song or something. This was before Slingerland sponsorship happened in 67 when we signed with ABC Booking Agency. And I'll tell that story later with Dar, but that's when she did the bass drums, the double bass. But she was already so exciting of a drummer that when she came with us at the end of 66, I started featuring her a little. I'd say do a little takeoff right here. And she loved it. I mean, it was a challenge for her. So she was always ready to make the crowd excited. She was just terribly professional,
Well, that you bring up something that I would like to ask. I mean, she's coming in incredibly talented, and she
Yes.
is really at the, even though she's young still, she's at the top of her drumming game. When you're saying do a little drum solo, were there egos involved? Did anybody get upset? Did anybody see the spotlight shifting? Did the dynamics change?
Egos did not exist in the Pleasure Seekers, except in a couple instances later, just like childhood psychology. And I'll explain that when we get there, and you'll love it. But yeah, there was, I would say, just as a little teaser, sometimes through the decade and all that, Darlene would be excitable to the fans, okay? We'd be somewhere and they would vegetate to Darlene because she was this unusual thing, a female drummer. She had that way about her. So she absolutely, excited the fans and drew an elevated momentum to us. She was that good. Yeah.
That's fabulous. Well, again, we are going to be talking about her in depth for the rest of the season now that she has joined the Pleasure Seekers. But I also now want to give the stage, or the rightful stage, to, and we're going to stop calling her Grandma Arno, and we're going to call her Grandma Lily Weaver, or Lily. She, again, was just hugely influential on the Pleasure Seekers. And this includes that Grandma Arno, Lily Weaver, was astute enough in showbiz to understand what was happening with the Pleasure Seekers and understanding the momentum that was happening with the band. I mean, if you want to call her a prototype for a stage mother, or in this case, stage grandmother, I think Lily Weaver would be that, although I think without the obnoxious, overbearing part that comes with being a stage mom. But I want you to now tell us about Lily Weaver. You had said she was a former showgirl, but since our last episode, we have clarified that. So
Yes.
tell us about Lily Weaver.
She was a successful model in the UK and she got married and all that. At some point, they had to move. They decided to move to America. I don't know whether it was from war years or what, but they moved and she had to leave it all behind, which she was not happy to do. She was absolutely obsessed with showbiz. She loved it and music. She used to read Billboard every single week. She was totally involved. And she was obsessed with her daughter and the talent she saw. So being, so into showbiz, she wanted to nurture that if she was leaving her modeling behind. So they loved the synergy of the Quattro family and the reputation and how far we'd gotten so far. And she knew that this would serve Darlene as a musician. And Darlene had a voice too, besides the drumming. So we were already doing a lot of gigs and everything and, moving up the ladder compared to the other girl bands. So we were into the heavier music. That's what distinguished us. And Dar caught on to that. She was happy to be in this new thing that was exciting and gaining momentum so damn quickly.
Oh,
We were.
I want to clarify one thing because, and you have mentioned this before, that Lily Weaver, the grandmother, Dar is her granddaughter. So the mother was not necessarily a part, although she had a little bit of part of the pleasure seekers in the background. But when you're saying her daughter, you mean her granddaughter.
Yes, her granddaughter.
Okay.
Sorry.
No.
Did
Don't be.
all the time. She was our stage mom.
It will exactly. And that's why I just want to only so it's not confusing for anybody listening. But so one thing I want to clarify, and then please tell us more, is there is a, I think he does a remarkable job. There's a journalist out there, if that's what his title is, Bruno Cerati, I believe. And he has written so much on the Pleasure Seekers and Cradle. It's online. It's, you and I have often looked at it to see what's true and what's not. And this is not at all to put him down. But this goes back to an ongoing conversation, Patty, that you and I have had now since season one about the way press can get something wrong and then it just gets repeated, repeated, repeated. And so that's where the idea of Lily Weaver, Grandma Arnone, being a showgirl was a mistake. And it should have been that she was in showbiz. And that's a very big difference. And so here is this former model. They have to move over to the US. They're now in Michigan. And now she's still into showbiz. And I think that makes perfect sense to me that she, if she's reading Billboard every week and she's aware, she knows about the Quattros. She sees that you guys are charting. She's probably reading all the press. She's seeing that her granddaughter should absolutely be a part of this incredible new band that's getting all of this attention. But the curious part about all of this to me is how do you have this gorgeous former model who's even just a, a stage grandma? How did she then become the band's costumer? Because this also, along with Darlene's talents, her eye and her talent for costuming will cement the pleasure seekers now into a whole new arena of visual dynamics. Tell us.
Completely. Dar's, Lily, she was, how do I say it? She was like a Svengali in her own way, like my daddy, I mean, we had two Svengalis, and she understood stage presentation and how important it was. That was her thing, her calling card. And we had some kind of synergy happening because we had bought a couple outfits ourselves, with our ideas, and they were, of course, very rad, which we'll get to. But Lily, we started exchanging ideas. It was like a combo thing, and she had her own ideas, and they were made some of our best outfits. She was so good at it. Her daughter, Dar's mother, was an artist. She would illustrate ideas. She was quite gifted with that. And Lily would execute, sewed her little heart off. She was an amazing seamstress, and Dar's mother helped sew too. They both worked on it, but Lily was the one that was in with us. I mean, just total synergy. We understood each other. She got us. She got what we were going for. We didn't want to be boxed in. We wanted to be trendy. We wanted to be in a heavier vein. We wanted to be sexy. Darlene said this last night. It was interesting. Sexy, but not sleazy. We just wanted to have a look. And she got that completely. So it happened incredibly organically.
I just love that. And pulling back the lens with all of this, isn't it interesting to see this legacy of strong female performers carry on the torch in this way, whether it's Lily Weaver, who has this eye for how to put yourself out there, and then she creates these costumes for you. I mean, Lily Weaver to me is the embodiment of our podcast tagline. In front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I mean, she is it. At different points, she fits into all of these categories. Same with you and your sisters, but we're, in terms of Lily Weaver, and I love that her last name is Weaver, and she's weaving these costumes. I mean, come
Love that. Love
on.
that. I love that. It's so perfect. And she looked young. You would never have guessed her age. She kept herself pretty damn good. So she fit right in. We got along real good with her.
Oh,
It was amazing.
I
It was
just love that. So, why don't you describe, and we will be posting pictures. We have, I think, almost all of them with you in them. So tell us about the earliest costumes that
okay.
Lily Weaver designed. And I know this is a new expression, but Lily Weaver clearly understood the assignment for the pleasure seekers, as they say, because she knew you were
Completely.
strong-willed. She knew you were a defiant all-female rock and roll band, as you said. This was rock and roll, and she didn't shy away from it. I mean, quite the
Oh.
contrary. So describe them.
Okay. Well, we started out with the English look that Nan loved, with the boots and the blazers and striped t-shirts and Levi's. And then the first one we bought with the hooker hose and the black spots like a leopard. I mean, who was wearing that? That was the first one we bought, and we have a lot of pictures of it. You'll see them. That was our intake, take on getting one that matched. And then we got the blue satin one with white lace sleeves and legs, see-through. Okay. Again, the sexuality, but not sleazy. And she was very good at understanding the flow of fabric. Okay. We would, the sleeves would be long and drapey. Like if I was going to throw my guitar up, it would flow, you'd have movement. She understood fabric. So when she designed for us, she had that in mind. A lot of them had interesting sleeves and stuff. So the blue satin one was very popular. It was beautiful. One of my favorites was the leopard cutout dress,
I
sort of
love
a
that one.
Raquel Welch look, and oh my God, that went down a storm with the boots, and we had the waist cut out, only a little strip in the middle. And then she made Nehru jackets for the Sergeant Pepper. It was so trendy. We had a special outfit for Sergeant Peppers. We had so many outfits that we could just pick and choose. It was amazing as the years went by how many we had in our repertoire. I don't know that any other girl band had that option. They were so amazing. We had the what did we call them? The eyelash dress. You have a picture of it. It's like silver. It's a little mini dress, but it's this silver things hanging off it. We had oh my God, the black sequin ones from New York City. That's what she made us, two sequin ones. We didn't mind that one. It was a mini dress, more like what was trendy with the Motown people, but we wore it. It was cool. We were going to the big city. So we had the sequin mini with the boots. Again, the boots.
Boots.
And then she made us a pink, oh my God, the pink sequin jumpsuit. And they were form-fitting to our figures. And they were, oh my God, we were laughing about it when we talked, Dar and I. It's like they were so heavy that they were a pain in the ass to wear on stage. It was funny. So funny. I hated wearing that one, but God, did it look sexy and cool. All pink sequins. And Darlene reminded me there were sequins all over their floor at their house after they got done sewing it. Everywhere. They couldn't get rid of the sequins. Oh my
I
God.
just want to pick up on a couple of things because, first of all, I'm just mind blown by this. Lily Weaver is so ahead of her time that she dressed you ladies in jumpsuits, sequined, no less. I mean, years before the glam movement with jumpsuits and all of that was coming in. But also, when I said that Lily Weaver understood the assignment, she really did because now let's imagine the pleasure seekers performing live with Jim Hawk doing these incredible light shows with your gear and you and these pictures on the, on the screen and all this psychedelic nature of the performance. And then you have Lily coming up with costumes and using fabric that's going to be in those lights. So she was manifesting your costumes as a part of the show. I mean, and
Absolutely.
as you said, your costumes would go on to become very much a part of your performance. People remarked upon them, your fans remarked upon them. This was definitely a part of your image, if you will. And I have to say, and I usually don't necessarily always want to say as a historian, but as a historian, I do want to argue that the Pleasure Seekers were the pioneering female musicians and performers using costuming as a gender bending and envelope pushing social and cultural conversation. And it wasn't to please or placate or a male-dominated society. It was to put your voice out there, literally, and also to show people what women can do without conforming in this kind of seductive, girly way. I mean, I think Dar said it perfectly. You were sexy, but you weren't sleazy. You were powerful, but you weren't obnoxious. And I think that your costuming added to that. So I'm curious your thoughts on that.
We even as we went on, even when Lily went out of the picture, later, we had learned so much from this woman. I mean, she was so powerful in her ideas and stuff. And we would carry it on. I remember one blouse we had it draped down with a big slit along the top, so it was draping all the time. We bought jewelry. We added jewelry, rings and chains that went up our arm when we'd wear a sleeveless thing. So we learned so much from her and carried it on to some very cool outfits. We used to run to New York and buy certain things from paraphernalia, which was a very trendy store. So we were always, she taught us to be ahead of the curve. She taught us that. I mean, what a strong friggin' woman. We were more ready than ever to hit the stage running, thanks to our growing sense of having our audiences react to this avant-garde type dressing. And with Lily's help, we pushed all the buttons in every way, how fabrics moved, what we look like, and creating unique looks that no one else was doing at that time. They were in their boxes of what was acceptable for women. So I don't know, we were able to, because of her help, we were able to present the full package of what woman could do based and not being in gender, in music, attitude, and with her stage presentation.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And that you, as a band, understood her importance and what she was bringing. And we've been talking about boots and the Pleasure Seekers wore boots. It is in this year, 1966, that Nancy Sinatra comes out with her song, These Boots Were Made for Walking. Walking. And I just read something interesting and it made me think of the Pleasure Seekers. I don't know if this is true or not. I love the story that it was Nancy Sinatra in 1966 who was looking to have a song come out. And the song, These Boots Were Made for Walking, was written by a guy and it was supposed to be performed by a guy. And Nancy heard this. She said, "Those are aggressive lyrics if a man sings those lyrics." She said, "That almost could be seen as abuse. I'm going to walk all over you." It's quite. And Nancy said, "I think a woman should sing that song because it's empowering when you put those boots on for a woman.
I
It's
love it.
abusive." And I was thinking again, pioneering pleasure seekers that you are, which is where I was making this connection. You as a band were singing songs about being empowered as women as early as late 1964. When you recorded that original song with Dennis Coffey and produced by John Reese Edens, Long White Line, which was basically, I want to ride my motorcycle. If you want to come along with me, babe, you can. If not, see ya, right? And then, exactly.
Keep up with me if you can.
If you can. And then by what, late 1965, you're performing an original song recording, What a Way to Die, which is drinking beer and partying before the age of 21. So your boots were taking you places that other women during this time were not necessarily experiencing it, but you were doing it with pride and excitement, and you were leading the way. It's so inspiring.
I'm telling you, it's funny. And a little bit of trivia on Nancy. We did a movie later with Frank Sinatra, in Miami at a mob bar, but they wanted us in the movie. So there we were. And Leo would not let us be in the movie because it was supposed to be a sleazy bar.
Leo
Again,
Fenn, Leo Fenn.
reputation. Our reputation, you know, he was protecting us. So our drums are in the movie. It's called Lady in Cement. What a circle from Nancy. And then we met Frank and Mia, and Raquel Welch was there. And we had a costume that we attributed to her. Everything moves in a almost a predestined way. It's so funny how that happens and who came into our lives and at different moments. Nancy Sinatra was amazing, and that song was amazing. And you know, I have one thing to say about the costuming.
Please.
You, homeboy bands.
Yes.
You didn't ask us about that, but if you want to, go ahead and I'll answer because they saw what we were
Okay,
wearing.
so wait, I of course I
Go
want to hear this, but
ahead.
I want to, and again, this, like Darlene and like her drumming and like Lily Weaver and like everything else, the costuming, this is just a little hors d'oeuvre of continuing episodes to come. But you said that the fans loved your costuming when this started to happen. And so
Yes.
I would love to hear a little bit about your initial fan response, but I also do, of course, you need to tell us, please, inquiring minds want to know how your homeboys, these very serious rockers,
Yeah.
were taking in the pleasure seekers who are being recognized nationally, all
Yes.
over the place. So please
I
speak.
think by then our homeboys knew that we were going to push the cards. I don't think they made a lot to do it out of it, except one guy, which I'll get to, that really said stuff. But the girls always queried us, you know, where do you shop? Where do you go? I mean, they're in these ordinary of the era clothing, and they loved seeing what we would come up with on stage. It was noticeable. It just really was because it was different and unique. So this one guy, Alice Cooper, who I'm
Who? I'm sorry. Who is this?
Alice Cooper, who I mean, he's like a brother. We know him for so long. Susie toured with him. You know, we practiced at his house, the farm and stuff. Anyway, for decades. Do you know what he says every time I see him? And he even talked about this outfit in a film that we did called She Rocks, about this one costume, the blue with the lace see-through sleeves, and he always brings it up. So, I mean, you know, that's gold. How can you ask for anything more than somebody to talk about your band decades later? He did it 2 months ago when I saw him here when he was on tour. He always brings that costume up. So, you know, you're doing something right. You know, that kind of memory of some band's costume, that's gold. It's gold. And so much love and respect to our stage mom, Lily. She was instrumental in always helping us seek pleasure in our presentation to elevate us. And it worked gangbusters for years. And it's interesting to me, looking back, how often certain visionaries see with a clear eye the entire scope of what it takes to be in showbiz, right? And others are just so sort of blind. And here we are with a woman like Lily, who had that vision. We were very lucky.
You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing, and you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing, and you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, boots? Start walking.